Welcome to Healthcare Rounds, the podcast serving you the ins and outs of health policy and business topics, as well as our take on the rapidly evolving healthcare delivery ecosystem. I'm John Marchica, founder and CEO of Darwin Research Group and host of this podcast. To learn more about us, go to darwinresearch.com. CMS has approved the nation's first value-based purchasing agreement for Medicaid by approving Oklahoma's request to allow the state to negotiate supplemental rebate agreements with drug manufacturers. Health and Human Services Secretary Alex Azar said in a statement, quote, "Oklahoma's plan for value-based drug contracts is an important example of how states can innovate to bring down drug costs. The Trump administration is committed to giving states the flexibility they need to make healthcare more affordable, and strongly supports innovations like value-based purchasing for prescription drugs." Separately, CMS denied a request by Massachusetts to implement a closed formulary to exclude certain drugs for Medicaid patients. Here's our take. We use the term value-based because that's what Oklahoma, CMS, and other media outlets are calling it. But in reality, it looks an awful lot like a garden variety rebate contract. Manufacturers aren't required to participate, but if they do, they're providing discounts or rebates to achieve preferential status on the Oklahoma State Medicaid formulary. Specifically, according to Oklahoma's application, quote, "Products for which a signed Medicaid state supplemental rebate agreement is on file will have preferred status. This status may be reflected in the product's placement in lower tiers of the tiered drug list, inclusion on a preferred drug list, or by removing a prior authorization requirement from the product," end quote. Now, value-based contracts imply that there is a performance incentive associated with the deal. For example, Amgen has a value-based agreement with Harvard Pilgrim, and we presume other payers, for its PCSK9 cholesterol therapy, Repatha, which gave Repatha preferential positioning on the insurer's formulary in exchange for discounts and potential rebates based on how well the drug performs. Massachusetts is still negotiating with CMS. The agency said it would allow a similar demonstration if Massachusetts negotiated directly with drug makers, but forewent manufacturer rebates under the Federal Medicaid Drug Rebate Program. That will never happen. CMS clearly does not want to limit access to drugs for Medicaid beneficiaries. Instead, with the approval of the Oklahoma model, CMS is suggesting that a state Medicaid program should have the ability to negotiate for supplemental rebates, as long as its formulary remains open. In our second story, Mercy announced a research collaboration with Johnson & Johnson Medical Device Companies, or JJMDC. In a press release, JJMDC said it would utilize Mercy's data infrastructure to inform and improve regulatory decision-making and health outcomes for medical devices. Dr. Joseph Droza, Mercy's Director of Outcomes Research, said, quote, "We begin this project to make sure the devices Mercy uses work for patients. With more than 8,000 new medical devices entering the market each year, it's critical that we find better ways to evaluate their performance." Mercy recently signed a similar data collaboration with Medtronic. Here's our take. Much of our research and consulting is focused on collaborative efforts between suppliers and providers, and helping companies find shared goals to leverage their strengths and improve patient care. JJMDC is an example of one entity that is thinking out of the box. In one example, JJMDC collaborated with Spectrum Health, a 12-hospital system based in Michigan, on a supply chain analysis to improve access and availability of its devices. According to one analysis, compared with baseline measures, Spectrum Health reduced weekly product codes out of stock by 49%, reduced expedited order fees by 96%, and reduced average days out of stock by 18%. In another example, the University of California, San Francisco partnered with JJMDC to reduce operational costs and make improvements in operating room efficiency. UCSF used JJMDC's Care Advantage to make improvements in surgical instrument tray setup time and several other endpoints for total knee and hip procedures. The results? While UCSF was already performing above benchmark, The collaboration helped improve instrument setup time in the OR by 3 minutes for hip procedures and 6 minutes for knee procedures. Other improvements, such as reduction in the total number of instrument trays, led to a cost savings of more than $262,000 annually. JJMDC also used Care Advantage for supply chain analytics that helped Intermountain Healthcare achieve efficiencies that led to direct product cost savings of more than $17,500 per year. Now, we have no financial interest in JJMDC, and this brief isn't a commercial for any one company. Rather, it's to point out that suppliers and providers need not always be at odds. Hospitals and health system executives often view pharma and medical device companies as adversaries, as vendors that only want to sell more product. And you know, perhaps that reputation is deserved, at least for companies that haven't moved beyond transactional relationships. In a recent interview with one of our staff, a chief medical officer for a large health system said, quote, "We've treated it like a vendor relationship. Let's talk about buy-in and percent discount and rebates, instead of thinking more strategically of what we offer in a value equation and to engage in those conversations with pharma." Another health system executive told us, quote, "It can't be just that transaction that defines the relationship. You've got to look beyond that and look deeper into each other's business to understand what each has and what each is motivated by to really find the commonality of purpose." We think that there is, in fact, commonality of purpose: healthier patients, sustainable businesses, and meaningful relationships. Partnerships between suppliers and providers can lead to better patient care and lower costs if organization leaders on both sides can suspend their biases, find common ground, and work together. Several weeks ago, I presented at EXL's 11th Partnering with ACOs and IDN Summit. During the conference, one of the presenters suggested that less than 10% of payments in the U.S. were value-based. That seemed low. So we did a little digging into what payers are saying about their move to value-based payment models and found that while there's significant variation among commercial health insurers, all were well beyond the 10% mark. For instance, 64% of Humana's Medicare Advantage members are in value-based models. You can find a chart and download it on our website. For comparison, a recent analysis by the Healthcare Payment Learning and Action Network found that in 2016, only 43% of healthcare dollars were from traditional fee-for-service or other legacy payments not linked to quality, compared with 62% in 2015. The analysis showed that 28% of healthcare spending came from reimbursement models with pay-per-performance or care coordination incentive payments, and 29% of healthcare payments were through shared savings or shared risk arrangements, bundled payments, or population-based reimbursements. Data sources for their study included the Learning and Action Network, America's Health Insurance Plans, Blue Cross Blue Shield Association, and CMS, representing 244 million people, 84% of the covered U.S. population.
Here's what else you need to know. Amazon is acquiring PillPack, an online pharmacy that packages, organizes, and delivers prescription drugs. Terms of the deal were not disclosed, but Bloomberg reported that Amazon acquired the nascent mail-order pharmacy for just under $1 billion. For months, analysts have speculated about Amazon's move into the drug delivery and distribution business and how it would disrupt traditional retail and wholesale drug distribution. Following the announcement of the acquisition on Thursday, Rite Aid, Walgreens Boots Alliance, and CVS Health collectively lost $11 billion in market value. PillPack is licensed to ship prescriptions in 49 states.
Mayo Clinic and Blue Cross Blue Shield of Minnesota announced a 5-year agreement that will keep all Mayo locations in Minnesota within the Blue Cross Blue Shield of Minnesota network. According to the terms of the agreement, Mayo and Blue Cross Blue Shield of Minnesota will establish a collaborative governance structure to ensure that the latest advancements in medical technology and procedures have a path to market through health plan coverage options. The company said that advancements in organ transplants, radiation therapies, and genomics are examples of areas that organizations are committed to supporting through a collaborative guided care approach, ensuring that individuals who would benefit from complex care receive a seamless experience and navigating Mayo Clinic to receive care.
According to the Boston Globe, Partners Healthcare is moving its employee health insurance coverage from Blue Cross Blue Shield of Massachusetts to its own health plan. The move includes about 100,000 beneficiaries and will effectively double the membership of Partners Neighborhood Health Plan. Partners said it spends $830 million annually on healthcare costs, and the transition will save $10 to $15 million annually and will offer lower copays for primary care visits. The Globe noted that the move, which will take effect January 1, 2018, is a blow to BCBS Massachusetts, which has administered Partners employee health benefits for more than two decades.
Humana and two private equity groups have completed their $4.1 billion acquisition of Kindred Healthcare. Under the agreement, Kindred's home health, hospice, and community care businesses will operate under Kindred at Home, a standalone business with 40% owned by Humana and 60% owned by TPG Capital and Welsh Carson Anderson & Stowe. Kindred's long-term acute care hospitals, inpatient rehabilitation facilities, and contract rehabilitation services business will continue to operate as Kindred Healthcare, a separate specialty hospital company owned by TPG and Welsh Carson Anderson & Stowe. The group also expects to complete its $1.4 billion acquisition of hospice provider Curo Health later this month. Humana will own a similar equity stake in Curo.
Highmark reports that its True Performance Initiative, the health insurer's value-based performance program, saved $260 million in healthcare costs in its first performance year. Highmark said True Performance is focused on primary care physicians, which it rewards for performance on quality and cost utilization measures. In 2017, participating physician practices had 11% fewer emergency room visits and 16% fewer inpatient admissions as compared with practices not enrolled in the program. Highmark said it achieved these results by focusing on chronic illnesses such as diabetes, asthma, and heart disease.
Centene Corporation completed its $3.75 billion acquisition of Fidelis Care, effective July 1st. According to Centene, the company is now the leading provider in New York by plan membership and has leading positions in California, Florida, and Texas. Fidelis currently has 1.6 million members in Medicare Advantage, Medicaid, and New York's State Health Exchange market. Reverend Patrick Frawley will continue to lead Fidelis Care as its chief executive officer.
Microsoft announced the formation of a new unit, Microsoft Healthcare, cementing the company's Healthcare Next initiative to advance artificial intelligence and cloud-based healthcare tools. The company said Dr. James Weinstein will lead the effort as vice president of Microsoft Healthcare and head of innovation and health equity. Weinstein was previously CEO and president of the Dartmouth-Hitchcock Health System.
Sioux Falls, South Dakota-based Sanford Health is acquiring Good Samaritan Society, a national network of nursing homes and senior care centers with 200 locations in 24 states. Combining two of South Dakota's largest employers, the two nonprofit providers will create a $6 billion entity with 47,000 employees. The agreement has been approved by the boards of both entities and is subject to regulatory approval. Terms of the agreement were not disclosed.
GE announced that it will spin off GE Healthcare into a standalone company as part of a strategic restructuring that will refocus the company on aviation, power, and renewable energy businesses. GE Healthcare provides biomanufacturing, cell therapy, medical imaging, laboratory, and other technologies. In 2017, GE Healthcare recorded more than $19 billion in revenues and 9% profit growth.
From all of us at Darwin Research Group, thanks for listening. Please be sure to rate, review, and subscribe to Healthcare Rounds. If you have a topic you'd like to see covered in a future episode, please email us at podcast@darwinresearch.com. And if you haven't already subscribed to our weekly strategic brief, go to darwinresearch.com and subscribe today. See you next round.